Very nice introduction. So yes, today I will talk to something that is very closely related to my actual work. So this is which is a challenge too, because I tried to avoid as much as possible technical and over-technical details. So I tried to talk about things related to my work, but in terms that are not hardcore scientific stuff. So, and I want to talk about something that will probably look new to you. It's still talking about quantum mechanics, but in a different way, about this idea of a theory that gives you pure and reversible pictures. And the word picture is important because there will be a lot of visual aspects in this talk. So let me first give you the plan of this talk. So I will start with a little bit of a prologue on this new view of quantum mechanics that emerges from quantum information. We are probably all used to an old view that comes from the early days of quantum mechanics, the view of indeterminacy, complementarity, and these limits to knowledge that comes with quantum mechanics. But this is not the whole part of the story. There are new things that comes from quantum information, and I want to emphasize these new things instead of the old indeterminacy stuff. So this will be a kind of premise. Then I will talk about physical processes and information flow, and I will introduce a language of pictures, a way to represent these processes actually without actual equations, but just by drawings. And within this language of pictures, which is a very broad language, is not only for quantum mechanics, but you can use it even for everyday life, within this language I will start to talk about physical principles, two in particular. One will be this causality principle, and I will explain what I mean with that. And then I will talk about these pure and reversible pictures that one can construct in quantum mechanics. So let us start from the prologue, from this new view of quantum mechanics. So essentially the question is, what has quantum mechanics given? Oops, sorry. What has quantum mechanics given to our culture so far? So what do we find in popular books, in the usual presentations? We find things that are essentially all from the 20s. So there is this Bohr complementarity, the idea that some experiments are incompatible and observing one feature prevents you from observing another. This was Bohr, actually this is Bohr sitting with Heisenberg. So we know about uncertainty, that we cannot really know with arbitrary precision the position and the velocity of a particle. And we know about indeterminism, so we cannot predict with certainty the outcomes of our experiments, even if we have the best possible knowledge of the state of the system. So as you see, all these things that entered in our culture are mostly negative. So this prevents us, we cannot know, we cannot predict. So quantum mechanics became, in the folklore, the theory of our limits. And this is what I would call the old view of quantum mechanics, the theory of limits. And many words have been used, so it's the theory of limits to knowledge, the theory of indetermination, imprecision, uncertainty, randomness, fuzziness, and there are tons of words like that that have been used. And I don't know about you, but I never really liked this view very much, because it looks, it's a kind of nostalgic view. It's like not having being able to really break up with the old classical physics and still remembering the old good days where everything was deterministic and everything looked so nice. And in a sense, it's a kind of, it's natural historically for the people who discovered quantum mechanics in the 20s. They were used to classical physics and they found something that was shockingly different. So they emphasized the differences. But I would say that after 80 years, we should have something more to say than keeping being nostalgic. So there has been this kind of nostalgia of determinism. So many physicists didn't really accept the fact that quantum mechanics was giving probabilistic predictions, one of which was Einstein, indeed, which was playing the violin, but meantime was always thinking, no, God doesn't play dice, so we cannot have really this kind of indeterminism in the outcome of experiments. And actually, this is the old view, but at some point there has been something new going on, that is the rise of quantum information science. And there has been some other important discoveries that have a more positive flavor. For instance, in the 80s and in the 90s, it has been discovered that the laws of quantum mechanics guarantee that we can have a completely private communication between two distant parties. That is, so the, whose security is guaranteed by the laws of physics. It's not guaranteed by the difficulty of some practical task, like doing a complicated calculation, but this security is guaranteed by the very laws of physics, if quantum mechanics is the correct theory. We also had fast computer algorithms, like Shor and Grover's algorithm, who showed that if we work in the quantum world, we can solve problems faster, in less steps, than in the classical one. And, well, I like these things because these ideas are not of the nostalgic kind that so we were able to measure the position and the velocity. Oh, my God, we cannot do it anymore. So bad. No, this is really something that we say now in quantum mechanics we can do more than we were able to do before in classical physics. And then another result of this kind is that the state teleportation discovered by, well, these guys, so... well, you can read the names in the caption of the figure. And the idea is that you can use just a finite amount of communication to transfer from one location, one spatial location to another, the amount of information contained in a system that has an infinite set of states. So with the finite communication, we can perfectly transfer an infinite set of states. This was not possible in classical physics. So this is another of these results that shows that quantum mechanics is not only a theory of limits, but also a theory of new possibilities. There is another thing to notice in these results of quantum information, well, in the word quantum information, the information part. So this new positive view that appears from quantum information is that you can think of quantum mechanics as a physical theory of information, as a physical description of information processing tasks that are done by different agents. And this is kind of new positive view of quantum mechanics, so it's a theory that offers new possibilities for information, for communication, computation, and generally processing of information. And so it is interesting to see this change of perspective. So in a sense, we can say that quantum mechanics is not only a theory of our limits in knowledge. So if you think of it as a theory of knowledge, you find the limits. But if you think of it as a theory of information processing on how we can communicate between one another, this is a theory of new possibilities, it is in fact. So if you move to the information paradigm, you have this kind of more positive view of quantum mechanics, which is the one that I will try to support in this talk, and to say, I will try to say that there is a lot of exciting things to say culturally and philosophically from this standpoint that are new and not so much explored as those that are here in this old view. Okay, this was the premise, the spirit of my talk. Let's go into more concrete stuff. So physical processes and information flow, I will start to represent them with pictures. So let's play a game. Imagine that we are in a laboratory, actually this could be this room, and in the laboratory, yes, imagine, in the laboratory we find many devices, well, actually like these devices. These devices transform an input into an output. So there is an input system and an output system. We can represent them with pictures in this way, like a box with the input on the left and the output on the right. What can we do with these devices? Well, you see here, we can connect them. So we can connect the two devices as long as the input of the second matches the output of the first. So for instance, if you have these two boxes with A and B, B is the output, and then second box with B as the input, well, that's okay. So we can connect them. And if you have two boxes with this output not matching the input, well, this is not okay. We cannot connect them. It's not anything dramatic, they don't explode usually, but it's just a rule of the game. So we should not do that. So in this language, you can think of this system as the physical system. This could be like photons, electrons, or particles. So you say this device takes one electron and produces a photon, this one takes a photon and produces an electron. And but this is not so important. As you see, I have A, B, C. I will not really care whether this physical system are atoms, molecules, or particles. I will focus more on the picture, on the graphical representation of what we do in the lab. Okay, let's go further. So in the lab, there will be some devices that have no input. So they these devices create a system in some state. They are a way to start. They initialize a system in some given state. Maybe this one you can see, say, this prepares an electron with the spin along some direction. So this is a way to prepare a system. You don't really care of what is before. That's why I put the word create in quotation marks. This is nothing dramatic. I'm not talking about creating things in the universe. So when I draw this, it could mean that there was something before, but we just didn't care. So from now on, it starts to be part of our experiment. So I'm using the word create in a kind of easy, analogic way. I'm not saying that we are creating stuff from nothing. And on the other hand, we have some devices that have no output. They are like measurements that destroy, again, in question mark, they destroy the measurement system and only leave an outcome with some probability. So this is what happens if you do an experiment and you don't care about doing anything else afterwards on the system. The system goes out of your experiment and you end up just with an outcome that happens with some probability. It's like a test that you can make. This is our lab, so we can now play the game. We can start making experiments. We can first prepare a system in some state. Then we can transform it with some device and we obtain an output state. And then finally we can measure and see what is the outcome. This is like the prototype of an experiment. And you can see that our information about the system is contained in the state and propagates from input to output when we apply these devices that transform the system. This is pretty much like the graphical structure of an experiment. To connect it a little bit with the real-world physics, you can think of this Stern-Gerlach experiment, which is probably a very famous experiment in quantum mechanics. I learned of it in high school, so you may have some memories as well, like I have from that. So the experiment is that there is an oven spitting out silver atoms. Then the atoms, well, are sent in random direction. They are filtered by a couple of slits, just to ensure that they make a nice beam with all the atoms going in the same direction. Then this goes through a couple of magnets, and what happens is that depending on the value of the spin, some atoms, the atoms may go up or may go down, and you can see this on a photographic plate. So we can think of this in our schematic way. So the oven plus the slit is our way to prepare the system. So this is our state preparation. Use the oven, send the thing through the slit. Then the transformation is what happens while the atoms go through the magnets. So something will happen and the system will be transformed. And finally, what we do here is to read whether on the spot on the photographic plate is up or down. This is our measurement. So this is how you can interpret a canonical experiment in this graphical language. By the way, I forgot to say, of course, if you need to ask questions during the talk, you are very, very welcome to do that, because if there is anything that is not entirely clear, please interrupt me. So now we can make a very complicated experiment, not just like the one I did before. So we can do something like this. We can prepare two systems together in a joint preparation. We can prepare another system, C. Then we can evolve all them together and finally measure all them together. This is just one of the many things we can do in our lab. And in fact, this language of pictures, as you may have noticed, is more general than a language just to describe physics and what happens in the lab. We can represent many everyday life situations in the language of pictures. And some of you may say, not surprisingly, I mean, if you think like Wittgenstein, who said, we make to ourselves pictures of facts, and this is actually what we are doing here. So for instance, we can have fun with the non-physics examples. We can have pictures in a bank. You can think that you have a system that is your saving account, and its state is to contain, well, say, $5,000. Then you send it through a transformation that would be like you make a one-year investment in a company, and then you see, you can ask, what is the state of my account now? What is the change that happened? Well, what happened? It depends. Things may have gone well, may have gone wrong, so you could have more or less than what you had at the beginning. So you make a measurement. You look how much you have, and well, this time you've been lucky. You got more than you started with. So this is like what was a physics experiment could be also an everyday life experiment. You can make pictures in the kitchen even. You can take some milk, and the state would be 2% fat and organic, and some ripe mango you can put through a process that is what a blender does. What you get in the end is a mango smoothie. You can taste it, and well, it tastes good. So this is, okay, this makes some fun, but after all, it's a way to say that there is nothing special about physics in the pictures I'm drawing. There is nothing scary, nothing we don't understand quantum mechanics like. This is really a very common everyday situation. I was speaking about processes. Let me talk about an important class of processes that are the reversible ones. With reversible, I mean just what the everyday language means with that. So, for instance, a rotation of this hockey stick is a reversible transformation because there is another rotation, another transformation can do that puts my stick back again in the same position as before. And this is what I represented by pictures. Said that this blue process is reversible is there is a turquoise process such that if you apply turquoise after the blue, we get the same that you had at the beginning, whatever you had at the beginning. This is to say that this turquoise box restores what was before. So this is a reversible process. And you ask the same also in the other direction. If you do first turquoise and then blue on any possible state, you get the same. This is like reversible means you can always go back independently of what your input was. So for every possible state. You can see this is like a graphical illustration of a very simple concept, but it's nice here that we can represent it with pictures. Okay, so good about pictures. Let's talk now about physical principles. A very basic principle is causality. So imagine that you have a sequence of measurements like this. So you have this thing happening in a sequence. First, you prepare your state, then evolve it through some transformation that produces two outputs. You measure one output, you send the other to another transformation, measure one output, send what remains to another transformation, measure that output. So the question is that when you measure the first output, you get an outcome with some probability. And you wouldn't really like that your outcome here depends on what happens later. So if you think again in the kitchen example, if you think of these boxes as representing you preparing some food, you can have the ingredients, then you process it and you taste to see, okay, how you are doing at some point. Then you say, okay, it is good, then I will process again, taste again, and process again. And it would be weird if the taste at some point would depend on what you do later. This is not what happens in our experience. So our experience obeys to what we can call causality principle. So the outcome of a measurement at a certain point, here this red measurement, does not depend on the measurements that we will do later, at later points, like here this salmon and tangerine measurements. And yes, as you see, this is the way I phrased this this principle refers to information. Is how much time? Okay, great, thanks. So this refers to information. The information, the probability of getting an outcome when we look at the system. So this is the way I would formulate causality. And it is nice that you can also paint causality. So there is an equivalent graphical notation that you can use to say that you have causality. To do that, let me first tell you what I mean by discarding a system. So if you have some physical system and you want to discard it, what I mean with that is that you measure it, you have a look at it, and then you forget totally about the outcome. So when I say discarding, I mean measuring and forgetting the outcome of the measurement. So the system goes out of our description, and even the information that we got goes out of the description because we decide to ignore it. So causality is equivalent to this statement. There is only one way to discard the system, and I will paint it with this black measurement with no outcome, well, with just one outcome, that is, we discarded the system. So this is this graphical representation, and we can imagine that if we have a system preparing a state, and then we discard this system, so what we get is that we destroyed the system, again, under quotation marks, so we are ignoring, we will not use the system anymore in our experiment, and we don't even have any information left about it. Well, in a measurement, usually we remain with some information, like the taste or the outcome of the experiment. Here, even the outcome is forgotten, so there is nothing remaining, and causality is to say that there is only one way to throw a system away. And after you have this, you can do games like keep one system and discard the other. So we can take a joint state of two systems, A and B, together, and you can decide to ignore B. So you apply your black measurement on it. So what remains is a state of A alone, because you destroyed B. And so, yes, this will be, it's like, how can I say? This state is like the shadow of this joint state after you obscure one part. What remains after you forget about a part of the compound systems you had at the beginning. So this was causality. Let me go, and this is true in quantum mechanics, and it is true in classical mechanics as well. So for the moment in my talk, you haven't seen anything special about quantum mechanics except the introduction. Okay, let's go to something that is really quantum, that is this possibility of having pure and reversible pictures. To say that, I need to tell you what I mean by pure and reversible. Well, reversible already said, I need to talk about pure states. So we said that a state describes our information about a system. Now there are obviously two possibilities. Either our information is maximal, so there is no way possibly to know the system better, or it is not maximal. If it is maximal, we say that the state is pure. So here I'm using this turquoise color, sky-like color, to allude to the pure state. And the physical example is the polarized light. So what you get after a polarizing glass is a light, is photons that are all polarized in the same direction. So this is a pure state of polarization. We know exactly how the photons are polarized. This is a real physical example. The opposite of pure is a mixed state. It's the case where we have non-maximal information. So it means that the system could be in many different pure states, but we don't know which. And in this case, we talk about mixed states. So to represent it, I tried to make this shadowy box where to say, okay, we don't really know exactly what the state is, so that's why it's mixed. And a physics example is the light that we see coming from the sun. In this case, the polarization is random. It's not like the light coming out of a polarizing glasses. Here, each photon is, its polarization is oscillating in a direction that is totally random. So now what is special about quantum mechanics? This. Quantum mechanics has an incredible property. That whenever you have a system in a mixed state, so whenever you are ignorant about the preparation, you can always obtain that system from a pure state of two systems together. So there is always some other system, and the pure state that is joint of the two together and is pure, so expresses maximal knowledge, so that your original mixed state is nothing but the shadow of this pure state when you discard the other system. So you can always think that whenever you are ignorant about something, at least fictionally, you can always imagine that there is something else that put together with that something would give a state of perfect maximal knowledge, a pure state. This is, I think, what they said. So in, you can always imagine, at least fictionally, that there is some other system that completes your information about a physical system and makes the whole state pure. Well, in the example of the light, the sunlight, indeed, we know that each photon of the light we observe is generated by by a reaction in the photosphere of the sun, a reaction between electrons and hydrogen atoms. So the polarization of a single photon is random, but if we had to include in the description the state of the atom on the sun and of the electron on the sun which generates the photon, and also the state of all the molecules that interacted with our photon while the photon was coming to the Earth, well, in principle, all this system together would be in a pure state of perfect knowledge. So we are ignorant about the polarization of our little photon, but this photon, together with all the rest, can be thought in a pure state. And this is something that resonates with the view of Schrödinger on entanglement. He said, indeed, in 1935, the best possible knowledge of a whole does not necessarily include the best possible knowledge of the parts. This is exactly what we are talking about. And Schrödinger remarkably said, I would not call this one, but rather the characteristic trait of quantum mechanics, the one that distinguishes it from our used old classical mechanics. There is another powerful property coming with purification. The idea that whenever you have an irreversible process, so a process that cannot be undone, you can always reduce this, you can always model this process as a reversible process, including more systems. In this way, so our irreversible process is the same of the reversible one, where the input interacts with the system in a pure state, and after the interaction, one output is discarded. So you can always reduce, at least in principle, at least fictionally, the irreversibility of a process to the reversibility of a larger process involving more systems. So in summary, this is the way I like to think of it. So we can have on the left our actual experience of the experiments in the lab, where states are mixed and processes are irreversible. And from this experience, we can reconstruct a pure and reversible picture of the physical world, of things that actually we are not observing, where everything is has maximal information and has and shows a reversibility. So this is, I think, indeed, the characteristic trait of quantum mechanics, as Schrödinger said. So summary of what I said until now, quantum mechanics can be thought as a physical theory of information, because on the left side we have our experience of information processing agents, and on the right side we had the physics description where everything is reversible and pure. And so this reconciles our experience of information processing agents with the pure and reversible picture of the world. Now a question is this pure and reversible picture just something that describes how things actually are out there? So does it mean that there is actually a system somewhere that, taking together our system, would be in a pure state? Or is this a mere fiction? So this is the kind of questions on which people in Quantum Foundation used in the past to argue very, very, very strongly. In this talk, I would take the liberty to say that it's not that important, in fact. I would quote Picasso for that, who said, I paint objects as I think them and not as I see them. So this is the way I would like to think of what we are doing in quantum mechanics. We are painting what we observe in the way that we think. So we want to make it reversible and pure, and this is a property of our painting. And whether or not this is actually real, perhaps, is not the most important question. So my talk is over, but before concluding, I wanted to give you two metaphors and the conclusion. So now let me say, so I use the word metaphor because the physics part now is over. So what I said until now, I was trying to say it in simple terms, but was accurate in the scientific sense. So I didn't say anything that was not just a simple way to present what we do actually in Quantum Foundations, or what I personally did. Now I'm trying to make analogies. This is not science. This is just, I was asking myself what these ideas suggest me in our culture. So one easy analogy is that this idea of purification is like the idea of completing a picture when we have incomplete details by introducing some virtual system that we are not actually observing. This reminded me of some optical illusions where our brain completes a picture just by imagining a shape that is not really there in the picture itself, like this, for instance. So here we are all making sense of this picture by imagining a triangle that has not been drawn by anyone. But still, the way we understand this is to imagine a triangle here. And I think this idea of purification is similar to this. Another analogy with the literature in narrative would be the idea of two systems that, the idea that two systems can be jointly in a pure state and make sense together, but separately may not make sense, resonated for me for the literary theme of the double, where to make sense of the identity of one, you need to know about its twin, and an obvious reference is the movie The Double Life of Veronique, and I liked very much this image from the movie where she is traveling on a train and observing the world that is distorted through this glass ball. And while she does this, we, from outside, see the mirror image of her on the window, and that reminds us of her double, Veronique, that is the other protagonist of the movie, which actually is far apart, so they don't really interact together, but you understand one through the other. With this, I would conclude. So the idea is that quantum mechanics, I would say, is not just a theory of limits. It's the physical theory that combines our limited experience of information processing with the possibility of painting the world in a pure and reversible way. And whether this is fact or fiction, perhaps is not the most important thing, at least here, because I think that the cultural richness of quantum mechanics is exactly in the possibility to construct new pictures about both the world and about our interaction with it as information processing agents. With this, I conclude, and I have a little bit of easy, short bibliography for you. Thanks for your attention.
Two questions. So first, is it the picture you made of having a set of small, visual states which combine, does that actually have use in real quantum physics, or is it more for our sake?
No. The language of picture is something that, well, it's not been used for long in quantum physics, but it started being used very intensively in quantum information, because people were drawing quantum circuits, and then it became like a real part of the foundational research. And for instance, Bob Koecke in Oxford is a person who really pushed forward that. And we actually did it in our work to do actual calculations. And there is a reason to do that. It's not just a pure fanciness. So one reason, of course, is that everything becomes more visual and can be communicated also to non-experts of the fields. But even for the expert, so at some point I showed you a circuit with like three systems. If you have to write the equation for that, this requires a lot of notational effort, because you have to distinguish where the transformation is acting. You have to write some little index to say, okay, this is acting on A and B, and this becomes C and D, so it becomes very heavy. Well, when you draw the picture, it's obvious what you mean. It's like, okay, this goes here, this goes there. It's much more readable. And so it's technically also useful, because then you can manipulate bigger equations and have a sense of what you are doing, instead of just blindly writing these linear maps. So this is a way also to have a better sense of the calculations, indeed. So it is actually used.
Thanks. Question two is, you mentioned briefly state teleportation.
Yes.
What exactly does that entail?
Sorry, what does
well, it? Well, so in particular, is it possible to actually communicate an infinite amount of information, or is it more a theoretical possibility that...
No. So here we should distinguish between communicating information in the usual sense. So if I wanted to transfer to you like a work by Shakespeare, and so if we try to use teleportation, quantum teleportation, to do that, we are not going to have any advantage, because this kind of classical information is not the type of information that teleportation is good at transferring. The point is that if you have a quantum system with just two levels, like quantum bit, the system has an infinite set of states, because you can think this system like the direction of a nuclear magnet. So this could be up and down. These are the two perfectly distinguishable states, like 0 and 1 of this information bit. But you have all the other possible directions, and they are not perfectly distinguishable between themselves. So you cannot encode an infinite alphabet, because then you will not be able to decode, because these states are not perfectly distinguishable. But the miraculous thing about quantum teleportation is that even without being able to perfectly distinguish these states, you can transfer them perfectly to a far apart location. So the idea is that in quantum information there is a real difference between reading information and processing it. So you can transfer the information perfectly without knowing what you are transferring. So you are not knowing that you are transferring a book by Shakespeare, but you know that you succeeded in transferring the state, whatever the state was. And actually, in quantum information, we know this feature, that if you tried to read the information, then you would not be able, you would have not been able to transfer it perfectly. You would have disturbed it. So there is this big difference. The same thing appears when you try to copy information in quantum mechanics. There is an advantage. So if you copy information in a quantum system and you want to make two copies, you do it better if you don't try to read it. So you can copy without reading, actually, which is, it sounds strange, but again, you can picture this and you can totally make sense of this thing. In a sense, all the time you try to extract information to read it with the measurements, with this, what I represented in the diagrams, you always introduce a disturbance, or generically introduce a disturbance. Yeah?
Are there fundamentally irreversible processes, or is that forgetting process just a change in our knowledge of the world? And the world maintains all the information in some sense.
This is exactly the question on which people working on interpretations were fighting.
Think? Yes or no?
I prefer to abstain from this question.
In the superposition of yes and no.
Well, there are occasions in which I like to think that actually there may be systems that completed the description.
Sometimes it can be measured to be yes.
Yeah. Well, in some, what I don't like, well, if you want to answer with this strict point of view where everything is real, so if we say that that we can purify the state of a system, it means that physically somewhere there is another physical system and they physically are in a pure state together, you very quickly run into the many-word interpretation of quantum mechanics, which you may like to do. I still feel that I haven't investigated enough to embrace this kind of point of view, and well, for the moment I would not do that indeed. But this is exactly the interpretational debate. Is the world really always pure altogether, and is just our personal experience that is like of irreversibility and mixed, or actually there are processes that are intrinsically irreversible? I like to take this point of view of the modeling. So this property of quantum mechanics is a property of how we decide to model and to paint things. And sometimes there will be a system, we can produce in the lab those situations. Sometimes there may be not. I wouldn't have a strong opinion on that.
Has the system that you're using for visualizing, the pictorial system, led to any new discoveries or insights on its own so far?
Well, it led to new proofs of things that that were known, actually. Because this is what you start to do when you have a new formalism. You want to see that at least you can reproduce as efficiently, as nicely the things that you already knew. And in this sense, it led to very efficient proofs that are nicer than the ones that people had before. Things like no cloning theorem in quantum mechanics can be phrased very easily in this language, or teleportation itself. And you can really play with the diagrams and get the right conclusions, even without knowing the math of quantum physics. It's just once you assign a meaning to certain diagrams, you can compose them and play, and you discover a lot of fun stuff that would have taken much more effort without this language. And there are also entirely new things that are being discovered. Not really, I would say, honestly, not as a virtue of using this language, but in the virtue of like the level of abstraction that this brings to. So this language brings us to think in more abstract terms. I didn't have electrons. I was not talking about practical stuff, but it was, everything was just a kind of linguistic game about physics. And this perspective actually brought to discover new things, especially in the causality point of view. This is a pretty new stuff. So people are also investigating situations where you don't have a causal structure. We don't have this black measurement that I had here, and things that at some point could influence things that were before in the circuit. And there are very interesting things to discover here, actually. I could give even examples, but this would become perhaps a little bit more technical. Yeah.
So Ian Hacking, he's a philosopher from the University of Toronto, gives a talk about the origin of mathematics, you know, why we can do mathematics. And he points out that the particular way in which we do mathematics has a lot to do with the technologies that were around when people were developing mathematics. So in particular, the writing system goes back ultimately to lists on clay tablets, which are then replaced by parchment, you know, ink on parchment. And, ink on parchment has a notion of line and dot. And the idea is that, geometry is very natural to do if you've got this technology of lines and dots. And he quotes Wittgenstein about how different geometry would be if, you know, we didn't have lines and dots. And then he points out that in other cultures in the world, I think it was the Incas, had a different system for keeping lists, which is something called a quepu. So they had a textile industry, and they would keep track of, how many transactions had been done with different colors of threads on a string. So it's nothing to do with lines and dots on a piece of parchment. And so what you might imagine is that had they had a chance, they might have developed mathematics in an extremely different way from the way it did develop. And I'm just curious whether, you didn't talk explicitly about doing category theory in mathematics with diagrams, but you can. Yes. Do you think that there's a potential connection there, that the part of our brain that we would use to do mathematics, if we had done it with the quepu, would be very different from the way we do mathematics now?
I would say that, you mean, if we had used from the beginning this kind of graphical, yes, the answer is, I would say yes. Again, for the same reason I answered in the question before. So for this simplicity reason, so there is a lot of excess baggage that comes from the usual notation that we use normally in physics. For instance, when we think of a transformation. You saw in my talk we had transformations of a system. Like this one. So you can think of applying a transformation to the state of a system, or you can think of applying it to the measurement you do later. So you can decide to stick this on the left and say this is a new state, or stick this on the right when you have a measurement and say, okay, this is a new measurement that I obtained by first transforming and then measuring. In the usual notation, these are two different maps. So there are two symbols for these things. In the picture, it is the same. It's whether you stick it on the left or whether you stick it on the right. And there are many situations like this where I found very hard to read the paper by even myself in older times, because there is this kind of have this burden of notation coming from the fact that you have to invent a new symbol every time you're using the same thing in a different way. Well, in the picture, the possible uses of a box are already encoded in the graphical rules of the language. This is the big. In a sense, we are making the same things more human readable. So we are encoding in some simple graphical rules that we can easily get accustomed to, things that written on paper would require introducing additional notations. In this sense, I think this kind of framework can speed up the discovery of new things because you are not hindered by kind of redundant notation. Well, this brings again back a little bit to Wittgenstein and this picture theory of language when he said, how is the quote? The structure of a fact is the possibility of its appearance in all elementary propositions. Sorry if I got the quote wrong. But this reminds very much like the meaning. What is this box? What this box does is defined by all the pictures in which this box can stay. But you always use the same box, while in the usual notation, you would use a different symbol for every possible different use of the same box. So this sounds very Wittgensteinian, even though, to be fair, we should say that almost everything can sound Wittgensteinian if we are arbitrarily generous in interpreting Wittgenstein, who was not always super clear.
Okay. There's a sort of compiler which takes you from this symbolic, the box language to the usual notation,
yes,
and back,
yes,
and forth again.
Yes.
And that's a one-to-one kind of.
Is a one-to-one besides this thing, that if you decide to use a box in a different way, you have to actually use a different symbol in the usual map notation. Well, here is you have less symbol in a sense. It's everything is implicit in the diagram, the use.
So there's no boxes that have an infinity of outputs.
Not in my little simple diagrams. One could think of imagining these fancier things, but in what people are doing for the moment, is everything is very very elementary and simple, like here. Actually, there is a paper by Bob Cook that is entitled Kindergarten Quantum Mechanics, which is a very, very enjoyable reading, and it is exactly about the idea. There is already enough structure to say a lot about quantum mechanics, even without going to infinite systems and to giant things. There is already enough with the two-level systems and with this simple picture to talk about exciting stuff in quantum mechanics.
This software is available for people to download and use themselves?
I guess so. We are recording it.
No. I mean, the software that you're using to put these diagrams
this software
together and so on.
Oh, no. This is just Keynote, so I did it by hand. No. In the papers we actually use there is an addition to the LaTeX package that allows to draw these pictures with commands.
Steve was saying that you could unpack the regular formalism from the graphical one, and Jim, you're asking about whether that process is automated.
I would love so. No, it is not. It should be, because then writing the papers would take much less time. But no, for the moment, the effort is all on the author. It's the author who has to do all these things to make the life easier for the reader.
Okay, well, we're basically at the end, so if there are no further questions, let's thank Giulio again.